Hello, one and all, and welcome to the podcast we call The Fantastical with myself, Steve Nussbaum. In the podcast, I invite my guests to come on, talk to me all about their musical taste, their memories, their experiences, and they get to collect their fantasy festivals, which I have christened Fantastivals. We are now on episode number 159. This is the last episode before Easter, as 2024 continues to fly by. And once again, just a massive thank you to everyone who has listened and tweeted the podcast this year. It's been an absolute pleasure to see all your listens, to get all your tweets. So a massive thank you from me to you, and a massive thank you to Matt James for being my last guest on episode 158. I really enjoyed having Matt on the podcast. He spoke all about his time in Gene, his solo career, his love of music, which I thought really shone through. And when I listened back to the episode, it really did make me smile. So a massive thank you to Matt. So that was 158. This episode is all about 159. This week, I'm delighted to be joined by the amazing people behind the Speakeasy fan scene. I'm sure you know who they are. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Chris and Faye.
Hi, Steve.
How you doing?
Guys, welcome to the podcast. I'm so glad to have you on together as a collective. It's really exciting. We've got lots to speak about. And before we talk about music, I always like to check in with my guests to find out how they're doing from a mental health perspective. So, Faye, I'll start with you. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm really good, actually. I'm in a really good place at the moment. I've had a really challenging couple of weeks. So just to give some context, I've just moved home and my house date for completion landed on the Thursday before the IWD fest. So I was trying to move house and run a festival, and I'm just still sat here surrounded by boxes and stuff. It's been mad, but I'm on a high because of life, because of the music, because of the new place. It's really exciting. So yeah, I'm feeling good.
That's wonderful to hear. I'm so glad the move went well. I know how stressful house moves can be, but I'm glad you're in there. It looks good from what I can see in the little background that I can see. So that's great for you, Faye. Chris, how are you, mate? How's life with you?
Yeah, I'm good. I keep myself busy, so just been really, really busy. But yeah, all good, in a good place. Loving listening to the music and football and everything else I do outside of work and whatever. So all good. All good.
That seems like the perfect kind of follow-up question then, Chris. So obviously people will know you from Speakeasy, but for anyone who doesn't know you, tell us a bit more about yourself, Chris. Obviously involved in Speakeasy, but what else do you like to do? What else are you into, Chris?
So I'm a massive sports fan, football, cricket, boxing, rugby, you name it. I'd go watch anything, you know, two flies racing each other, I'd go watch. I was an Oxford United season ticket holder for 20 plus years. And then I moved down to Hungerford. My wife's a Plymouth Argyle fan. So my son was getting dragged to Plymouth 1 week, Oxford to the other, and was getting quite annoyed as he sort of grew up with all the travelling. So we started going to watch our local football club, Hungerford Town Football Club. And suddenly, from going to see a game 4 years ago, I'm now vice chairman of the football club. So it's pretty mental, you know. We were only two leagues from the Football League till last year. So it's been pretty full on, but it's great fun. Keeps me busy.
That sounds amazing. That sounds like it could be a podcast just on that. It sounds really interesting. But this is obviously all about the music. Faye, obviously I know you from Twitter. You've almost got your almost famous Twitter handle as well. But just for anyone who might not know much about you, Faye, tell us a bit more about yourself.
Oh, blimey. Okay, well, I mean, obviously I joined Twitter quite a few years ago, and it was to try and find some people who had similar music tastes to me. So the kind of, I guess, real world people around me have really different tastes to the music that I like. And I've never really been able to kind of connect as an adult, I guess, with people who have the same taste as me. So kind of that was what I was seeking out. You know, Chris and I were work colleagues. I used to be his manager, actually, at one point. And it was after I stopped being his manager, we were chatting about music. At one point, he'd come over to my desk. I was listening to some music and he asked me what I was listening to. And we realised, you know, how closely aligned we are in terms of kind of what music we love. So, yeah, I mean, music is my love at the end of the day. But apart from that, so I've got a 7-year-old son called Flynn, who's my best friend and takes up quite a lot of my time. I'm massively into film. So I've been into film, again, since I was a kid. I studied media at college and things like that. I'm a bit of a sci-fi nerd. Most people that know me know that I've got quite a big geek element to my personality. But I like to think that means, you know, I'm easy to get to know and easy to talk to and stuff. So yeah, that's a bit about me, really.
That's brilliant. You say your love of music is there for all to see, and I'm sure it is. When did that love of music start, Faye? Was there an early music memory that you can relate to? When did your love of music start?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I've always loved music. I wouldn't survive if I didn't have it surrounding me all the time. You know, since I was a kid, I started playing the piano when I was 4. And I played the piano all the way through up until my early teens when, you know, I decided it was probably not cool enough kind of thing. So it kind of started from there, really. And then my mum and dad, bless them, they did always have music on in the house, but it wasn't, you know, there was a lot of Gloria Estefan and work going on. It just wasn't my thing. But when I was 8, my mum went back to work and I started to be looked after quite a lot by my godmother. And she had a granddaughter called Kylie. I don't know if she was named after Kylie Minogue. I mean, that'd have been a bit mean. But so she was called Kylie, and she came to stay with them for a while. And she kind of is the one that really got me into my love of music. I remember sort of jumping up and down on her bed in the spare room with hairbrushes. And she sort of introduced me to Madonna and Transvision Vamp and Susie and the Banshees and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it just kind of took me on a slightly different path. And then, yeah, I guess the rest is history, really. I've just always been obsessed, always listen to music whenever I can.
And what about you, Chris? What is your earliest musical memory, and how did you get into music?
My dad really got me into music, I suppose. So first musical memory would have probably been when Genesis brought out their Invisible Touch album. So my dad would play that constantly. My dad went all around Europe watching Genesis when I was sort of, he was in the forces when they played in Germany, he'd go watch them, etc. So I was massively brought up on sort of Genesis, and he was from Birmingham originally, so he was into his like Sabbath and Zeppelin and all that sort of stuff. So I was sort of brought up on that. And then as I got older, I sort of discovered Bon Jovi, who were a huge influence in my early years. Everybody takes them to Canada now. Still the band I've seen the most, unfortunately, but I refuse to go now. Richie Sambora has gone, but anyway, that's another story. But then my parents got divorced and my mum remarried, and my stepdad Ian used to work in the music industry, and he worked on the radio, interviewed Errol Brown from Hot Chocolate, etc. on the interview. And he sort of, because he worked in the industry, he had so many vinyl. I mean, I collect vinyl, I got loads, but he must have about 50,000 to 60,000 7 inches, you know, because he used to get given them working in the industry. And he would play me music he thought I would like, and I would sort of soak it up. But then I started to discover, I mean, I went to boarding school at 6 years old, so it was a microbe sort of climate at school for music. And I'd discover bands like, I don't know, Oasis, I'd hear, you know, Definitely Maybe or whatever, and I'll come out and go, I've heard this amazing band, no one's ever done anything like this, not knowing about all the influences come from Oasis. And I'd play it to my stepdad and he'd go, well, they've nicked this from here, this from here, this from here. And by playing in one song, I would sort of hear four new bands or four new songs. And then through all my sort of teenage years, when I was over at my mum's and my stepdad's, it would go like that. And he'd play me a song because I played him a song. And then for Christmas, he'd remember all these things. And he'd buy me all the CDs from the bands that I liked that he'd sort of played. And that's sort of how my, you know, music stuff came up. You know, I remember even when I was 18, 19, and this is going to sound a bit stupid for some people, I went and worked in Austria for a year in a bar, and I heard Proud Mary from Ike and Tina Turner for the first time, and it blew my mind. And I came home and I was saying, I can't believe this song is absolutely amazing. He goes to me, you know, it's not the original, isn't it? And I'm like, it's Ike and Tina Turner. Of course it's the original. He goes, no, it's Creedence Clearwater Revival. I've never heard of them before. And from that moment, a love for Creedence sort of came from. So my stepdad was probably the biggest influence in my musical life, definitely.
That's an amazing story. That's lovely to hear. And what about your own record collection? You said you got lots of vinyl. What was the very first one that you bought in, Chris? What was your first record? And do you remember buying that?
So the first cassette I bought with my own money was Who's That Girl by Madonna. And the first CD I was brought was a double album, Genesis Live, The Longs and the Shorts. And the first CD single I brought on my own was Iced Tea Colours. Don't know why, but it's a tune anyway.
And what about you, Faye? Do you remember your first music purchases and what they were and the whole experience of buying them?
Yeah, I do. So it's a bit of a random one as well, I guess. So the first music I bought myself, I bought two cassettes. on the same day, it's the first time I'd gone into town on my own. So I got some money off my mum, got on the bus. It was this whole like, oh my God, I'm growing up. Here's my independence. Here we go. So yeah, I went into HMV and I bought Wonderwall. And I also bought Gangster's Paradise by Coolio. So like the juxtaposition between, but both of those are just absolute smashes, right? I'll let myself have that. And then I think my first CD, you know, I feel so bad for my sister. My first was Jagged Little Pill by Alanis Morissette. And I played that over and over and over. Yeah, I don't think she can hear an Alanis Morissette song without thinking about the torment of the singing coming from my bedroom all day and all night. Yeah, yeah.
Both of those singles still hold up. If you played it on any dance floor or pub or bar now, you would get a word for word rendition of both of those songs. So I think you're right there. And Alanis still going strong, still touring that album up until last year. Yeah. So I think we were going
to Amsterdam for Faye's birthday a couple of years ago to see Alanis, and COVID hit and it all got cancelled, so it ruined it. We never got to go out there to see it.
We didn't.
Who knows? Who knows? Maybe one day, hopefully, if she gets it back on track. Definitely. So, yeah. Faye, I'll start with you, then. In terms of kind of getting involved in the music scene, was there anything before Speakeasy that came along for you, or something that kind of you wanted to get involved with? How did you kind of get involved in the music scene?
I mean, when I was a kid, I really badly wanted to get into the music industry, and that's why I did media at college, because I thought, you know, well, that'll be the way in, you know. And then as I got older, I realised, you know, this is such a tough area. Like, it's rare for anyone to really kind of get into it properly. But one of my friends, when I was in sort of, I guess it must have been the first year of college, I made really good friends with a cousin of one of my neighbours who was from Manchester, and her dad used to work for the NME. And I kind of got chatting to him, and I sort of said to him, you know, what kind of things can I do? What can I be doing to kind of get myself geared up, really, I guess, to move into that side of things? And he said, what is it you want to do? And I said, I don't know. I just want to do something with music. And he said, you're going to have to pick a field. Do you want to be a DJ? Do you want to be a journalist? You know, that kind of thing. And I'd always been really good at writing through school. Like my creative side kind of always came through. And I said, you know, I'd love to maybe, you know, do some gig reviews or do some album reviews and things like that. But when I started talking to him, I realised how little I knew. And actually, things kind of just totally went off kilter, because when I finished college, I wanted to get a job because I wanted to start earning some money. I wanted to learn to drive and all of that. Before I knew it, I was in the 9-to-5. Once you start earning that money, it's really hard to pull back from that. So I didn't do anything with it for the longest time. And then, so it was nothing before Speakeasy. And Speakeasy just kind of started as a bit of a giggle, really. We didn't really think it was going to turn into what it has, but I'm so, so blessed that it has. And the experiences I've had in my life in the last three and a half years are just, if you'd have told 15-year-old Faye some of the stuff that has happened in the last 3.5 years of my life, I would never have believed it. So it's just been such a special thing. I'm so glad that Chris and I became close, because it was his idea, you know, and I would never have started it if he hadn't have sparked that in me. So I've been really lucky.
So Chris, what gave you the idea then? Was that always kind of something that you had in the back of your mind, and then you bonded with Faye over music and you thought this is kind of a good time to do it? So how did the idea come to you, Chris?
So I've always sort of dreamt about being involved in music, but like most people do, it sort of never happens. You know, I remember when I was sort of like late teens, maybe 17, 18, I'd see in the back of the NME and the Melody Maker where the European coach tours and stuff, to go see bands and whatever. And I was thinking, I could hire a coach, I could go get it. And then I realised you needed the insurance and all that sort of stuff, and it scuppered that idea. So, you know, it never really happened. And then I started listening to the Britpop Revival show, which is a massive, massive influence on Speakeasy. And I started reading articles by the Mild Mannered Max on his blog. And that was sort of inspiring me. And I thought, right, maybe I'll write a book. So I just started writing stuff on my lunch breaks about bands. And I was going to do like the A to Z of Britpop. And then I realised someone had already done it. So I was like, okay, that's covered that. Then I just thought, well, you read about all these fanzines. Why don't I see if I could get a few contributors from the sort of Twitter community that, you know, I'd started to make friends with online and whatever, and maybe do a little fanzine, and we could do some album reviews and maybe try and see if fans are looking to get some interviews and whatever, and see if other people want to use it as a platform to write. And I actually originally went to speak to Faye to see if she fancied doing the front cover, because she's just really creative. And it sort of, she was like, yeah, I'll do the front cover, but I want to write. And it's sort of, the two of us then sort of come up with the idea, and we got chatting to our friend Jeremy, who's in San Francisco, Jeremy Goldstein. And he is the, how can I word it? He taught us a lot. He is, I wouldn't say he's the brains behind it, but he funneled us in the right direction. He put a lot of emphasis on the quality that we had to provide. It couldn't be crap. It had to be spelt right. It had to be grammatically correct, factually correct. So he was saying, if we're going to do it, let's do it properly. And if you look at the first issue of Speakeasy to the last issue, I mean, it's like a totally different product. It's ridiculous. You know, I'm not joking. I'm really bad at spelling and grammar. And it took me probably, it took me 15 issues to get there and there right, you know. I've just never been good at that sort of thing. I can fire words down and make a good story, but getting it right was really tough. And Jeremy really helped hone in that skill for us now, which has helped the zine get to where it did, really. And, you know, we chanced our luck, and we, you know, I think the first issue, I literally Facebook messaged Damon Minchella, you know, the ex-Ocean Colour Scene bassist, and they're a big band in my life, and he now plays with Richard Ashcroft and stuff. And he said, yeah, I'll do it. And I was like, oh my God, one of my heroes has just said, yeah. And then we learned pretty quick that they can only say no. So we just started asking everybody, and we got lucky, really. So I think lockdown helped as well. You know, people got stuck at home. And when we first did it, we were going to print off like 30 copies for some mates, put it out on Twitter. And then suddenly the first issue sold 700 copies. And we were like, shit, we can't print this at home. So we had to then find a printing company to do it for us. And it sort of, we're like, I'm not joking. For the first year, the last week of every month, they would come over to my house, and my wife and my kids would help. We had, you know, you can get those huge IKEA bags. We were filling them up with envelopes. And the first issue, we literally stuck every single stamp on it, took it to the post office, and the guy goes to us, you know, we've got something called Drop and Go. It's free. You just fill in a form, and they put the stamps on for you. I'm like, thanks. We know that for next time. But yeah, we learned a lot, and it was great. And like Faith said, it's stuff that's happened since. It's been amazing.
I guess let's touch upon some of those experiences then, Faye. So you said the 15-year-old, you wouldn't have been able to believe kind of some of the experiences you've had. So I guess what are your top experiences, or your most treasured memories of Speakeasy so far then?
Chris is smiling because he knows exactly the first, there's probably two. So I think for me, my first interview on my own that I did with an artist, it was a huge one for me. So Chris can speak to anyone. It doesn't matter where I go with him. He'll find someone. He'll find common ground. He can talk to anyone. You know, he's that person to be around. But people who are close to me would never believe that I'm quite shy, but I am quite shy, and I find it really hard to like introduce myself to people and things like that. So I was so nervous. I was so nervous. But I'm so glad I did it. The first person I interviewed for the zine was Matthew Priest, the drummer from Dodgy. And he is one of the most friendly, funniest guys I've ever met in my entire life. And when I kind of sat down with him and I said, you know, look, I'm recording this on my phone. Bear with me. It's the first time I've ever done this. And he spent half an hour before we even started kind of guiding me through what makes a good interview. So how to formulate my questions, how to engage with the artist properly, how to do the right research. I mean, obviously that guy's been interviewed by thousands of people and he knows all the bad experiences. And so he was able to give me like some really good tips. And honestly, without him and that first experience, I don't think I'd have gone on to be as confident as I became. And it was just wonderful. And he was just sharing so many funny stories. There was stuff that we couldn't print because...
I mean, it was hilarious when I listened back to it.
I've still got it on my phone and I will, you know, indulge from time to time, have a little reminisce on that conversation and remember kind of where I was when I started. But that was honestly like a really pivotal moment for me because it made me realise, actually, do you know what? With the right guidance, we can do this. We can get this right. And we can, you know, and Chris was saying before about Jeremy and kind of how we lined in. And it was about getting that credibility and being professional. And we were so keen from the start that we just didn't want this to be like a tin pot thing. We wanted it to be something. But I guess my next best, this is just like a life memory that's going to just stay with me forever. So
Dave.
It is. So
yeah,
where
that's
Chris
the one
lives,
I thought you were going to do first.
Where Chris lives in Hungerford, right? Sometimes he has problems with his Wi-Fi, so I wouldn't be surprised if he drops off at some point while we're talking. But we were incredibly lucky to be able to interview Dave Rowntree from Blur.
Wow.
And we put in, I think, 45. He said, I think I can give you about 45 minutes. By the end of it, I think we were on the call for near to 2 hours by the end we'd finished talking. I mean, that guy has got some life experience, the things that he's done, the things that he's been involved in. But at one point, as we were sort of mid-interview, Chris's Wi-Fi froze, as it does, and he was like, oh no, I think we've lost him. And I said, what should we do? Do you want me to carry on? He's like, no, we can wait for him. We can wait for him. It's fine. He said, I'll tell you what, while we're waiting, I've had my first trumpet lesson today. Do you want to be the first person in the world to hear Dave Rowntree play the trumpet? I nearly fell off my chair. And then he proceeded to play the trumpet for me for about 3 minutes. Horrendously. I mean, it was horrendous, but I just was completely lost in that moment. I was like, oh my God, I have to tell everyone about this. And then Chris reconnected and saw us, everything all right? So, oh yeah, Dave's just been playing his trumpet for me. He thought I was joking. It wasn't until the end of the interview when we disconnected.
It's when I was playing it back and I heard it. And I'm like, what the fuck?
No, I thought we spoke about it afterwards. We didn't. Yeah, but he thought I was joking. But no, I was really, just what a moment that was. Just, yeah, amazing. Just amazing.
Sounds absolutely superb. What about you, Chris? Obviously, you missed Dave playing the trumpet for Faye, but I'm sure you've had your own amazing magic moments.
Yeah, I mean, interviewing Ian Brody from Lightning's is pretty cool. You know, it took a while to get that all in place because he's such a busy man. And he was so, again, so kind and generous with his time. And most people know his son's his manager. So Riley, which the life of Riley is about, is his manager. So I was talking to him and it was a bit of a mind boggle, really. But, you know, I went on the podcast thinking, you know, we'd have a bit of time. And he came on with his sunglasses on, just like, you know, see him on stage and stuff. And I loved that. So that was a pretty cool one. And interviewing Gary Crowley was a really good one as well. And we talked for ages about his love for the Beatles and Jam and all that. So that was a really good one. There's just been so many good ones. And, you know, the amount of people who've just given up their time to either have a chat or, you know, to email us back. Yeah, it's been. There's so many good ones. You know, people playing guitars down the phone to you and whatever. But yeah, no, it's been great, all of them.
And recently,
I think the other thing for me. Oh, sorry, I was going to say. I think the other thing for me that me and Chris talk about quite often is the amount of people's phone numbers we've got in our phones. We're just like, excuse me. How? Who even are we anymore? Like, I genuinely have to pinch myself sometimes. To think about, you know, and people have just been so kind and given us their time, you know, and helped us formulate things. Like, I've just been so blown away by the entire music community. And that doesn't just extend to the artists as well. I mean, there's people like you, Steve, everyone else on Twitter that's in some way involved in either podcasts or radio shows, or, you know, they put out digital content, music reviews and things like that. It's such a lovely community. Everybody wants everyone else to do really, really well. And I can't think of another area of life where there isn't that competition and people want to stand. I'm not saying there aren't people that want to step on each other. Of course there are. But the vast majority of people that we interact with are just so supportive and so kind. So anyone that's listening that's had anything to do with Speakeasy, I just want to say a massive thank you, because we wouldn't be where we are without all the help from everyone else.
Yeah, that's really nicely done.
100%.
And in terms of, I guess, what's just happening, so you put on your own festival right? So we're going to talk about your fantasy festival very shortly, but you actually put on a real life festival. So tell us about that, Faye. How did the idea for that one come about?
I'm gonna have to put across to the ideas, man. This was Chris, and this was Chris completely. I mean, well, I say it was Chris completely. I guess fairly early on, I can't remember what issue number it is now because obviously we've done so many. But I was really keen for us to do a women focused issue of Speakeasy, and we enjoyed doing that so much. When we got so much interaction with people. You know, people just love that we wanted to put that full focus there. And when we'd finished that and it landed so well, we kind of left that period of time like, we want to do something again in the future that is putting that lens on women-fronted bands and women solo artists and things like that. Because, you know, if you look at, you know, the 90s heritage kind of acts, which is what Speakeasy was kind of all focused around, you know, two-thirds are predominantly male-dominated. So we kind of knew that we wanted to do something additionally, but I'll let Chris take this one. I'm not taking the credit for this.
Yeah, I mean, so it's actually our third festival, really. So we did one which was mainly 90s and new bands. I don't know, maybe 3 years ago, and that was back down to our link. You know, before we came on, we were talking about The Kind and stuff, and that goes back to our link with The Kind, because the bassist Tristan is. I don't know if he's like the CEO or director of Bucks Student Union in High Wycombe, which is just a wicked music venue. It's got two rooms and, you know, they do sound engineering courses there and everything. So they invest in the equipment and the sound systems in both venues that they've got there. So much so, I think the main room's got the same, it's certainly done by the same company did the Royal Albert Hall, so it's like top-notch stuff. And we got into conversation with him and we decided to put on a 90s festival. And we had the likes of Space Headline one day, My Life Story the other day. We had Thousand Yard Stare, The Kind. We had lots of new bands as well. And that went really well, considering it was in the middle of COVID as well. It was just after the restrictions lifted. And then we decided to do a second one, and we thought we had an even better lineup. And we had like the Primitives and Frank and Walters, Apollo Junction. It was going to be Linoleum's first gig back from reforming. But unfortunately, bad timing again. COVID came back, and we had to pull it last minute. So we took a bit of a back step and thought, do we want to do this again? And I love putting on events, so I suppose I was sort of the driving force, and maybe if the right thing comes up, we should do it. And then one weekend, myself and Faye went to the same venue to go watch. So Tristan and Danny from The Kind, they run a festival called Ramblin' Roots, which is like a bluegrass and Americana festival, and it's over 3 days in High Wycombe. It's pretty much sells out every year. It's really packed, and they have amazing acts from all around the world play there. And we went along and we watched it and had a great time, had far too many drinks on the Saturday night. And then on the Sunday, both of us were a little bit worse for wear and we got chatting. And I just said, wouldn't it be good if we could, you know, just do an all women thing, you know, a festival and just focus on that for a change. And sort of they hung over and said, yeah, I quite like that idea. And I think she went to get a cup of coffee or something and Tristan walked past and said, what do you think of this idea? And he goes, I like it, come back with a concept. So we then, once we sobered up, drove home and we sort of chatted all the way home in the car about it. And then sort of the week after, we sent a concept over to Tristan and the venue, and they really liked the idea. So at that point, we had the venue, we had the concept, and we thought, we would really love Loud Women to get involved. We've been to a Loud Women Fest before and they it was amazing and it blew our minds. So we spoke to Cassie who founded that organisation, and, you know, she was really keen to do it. And it sort of then all the dots sort of and T's crossed and whatever, and it all sort of fell into place, and we're like, well, we're gonna have to come up with what we think is a really good lineup. So we decided, you know, we'd have two separate stages. We would focus on trying to get females from the 90s involved and maybe a couple of bands who've got links or up and coming and whatever, and Cassie would do more of the DIY side of thing, and it sort of came from there really, and it just worked.
And it must have been the ultimate buzz on the actual day, right? So I've seen the video footage, I've seen photos, it looked like it all went really well, everyone performed brilliantly. How proud were you and Faye when it came to fruition?
Yeah, over the moon. I mean, it's great when you have that idea, and it's great when you build the lineup and all the artists are coming back, and then you put the tickets on sale and you get an initial rush of people buying tickets and you think it's great. But there's no way of hiding the fact that it is stressful as anything from that point on till the day. For ticket sales, for getting the bands there, making sure everybody's happy. It is stressful. But then on that day, I mean, I was probably more stressed than Faye on the day. And I end up running around a bit like a headless chicken, making sure everything's right. But once that final band arrived, and it was touch and go at one point because their train was delayed and I had to go pick them up from the station, we could relax. And then you sort of look back and go, we just did that. And everybody's had a great time. The artists have said it's one of the best things they've done, and as in organised wise, and we did that. And, you know, we always joke and say we're sort of a little bit of chances there, but we're not. We actually know what we're doing, and we can put it on and make it work. And so at that point, you reflect and you think, yeah, it's great, but I'm not going to do it again. And then 2 days later, you're starting to think of more ideas, and it goes again.
Faye, what about you? What are your feelings on the actual day then when you know the bands are there, the venues like got the people in there, people bought tickets to turn up? How are you feeling?
Yeah, I mean, Chris is saying he thinks he was more stressed. I think I just hide it better, but I was definitely really, really nervous. We got there super early because we wanted to make sure that everything was kind of logistically sorted. Chris and I effectively were stage managing through the day. So for the 13 bands that we had, you know, we were running between stages, making sure the sound checks were working and all that kind of stuff. And we had Mickey Brenny from Lush and Deb Googe from My Bloody Valentine were flying in from Dublin. So we had to make sure they were met by a car and driven to the venue, and we picked them up and, you know, just loading all the bands in, showing them around, showing them what's what. It felt really real, like really, really real. And like Chris, I think once the last band had arrived and we knew everything was kind of set, at that point, you know, the adrenaline eventually stopped and I sort of started to calm down and started to get really introspective and quite emotional, actually, about how well the whole thing was going. And I was talking to, you know, quite a few of the audience and just trying to get a vibe for how do you feel it's gone. And I think one thing that summed it up for me at the end of the night is I was talking to a couple of friends of ours who came along and they said, right, you're doing it again next year? And I said, well, I mean, if the demand is there, and they were like, this would be a yearly dead cert for us. I don't even care who the lineup is. I'll buy tickets now if you put them up. And I was just like, wow. So to even be thought of, like, you know, in the way that, you know, Chris and I think the same thing like that about Shine. We don't care who's going to be on the lineup. We're going to go because we know we're going to love it. The concept's fantastic. The audience is great. You know, we've never had anything but a great time. And I think that's just to kind of get that. It's not on the same level, but just to have that feedback was incredible. And, you know, the amount of emails we've had from the bands and the artists since saying, you know, we loved it, guys. We'd love to work with you again. And the Pop Guns called us proper. And I'm just like, okay, they've been in the music industry for 30, 40 years. And if they're calling us proper, maybe we've got this, you know? That's what it felt like, so.
That's amazing. All right, so what next then for Speakeasy? What next for you guys then? Obviously, you're just off the back of that IWD Fest, as, you know, you've both spoken about so passionately, and that's gone really well. What are the future plans then for Speakeasy? Chris, I'll let you lead this with this one. What does the future hold?
So the next thing we're doing, and we're just currently sorting out support acts and stuff, is we're jointly promoting a tour for Electricity. So we're promoting 5 of the dates on their short tour. So they've got like a 3-week period because one of the members is in LA, one of them's in Colombia. So they've only got a short sort of time frame. So we're sort of helping them out with that. And hopefully that'll sell out. We're sorting the support acts out at the moment for that, which is good fun. And then we've potentially got another event that we've been approached about where three bands would like to play together, and they want us to promote that. And we've got a few other ideas maybe just sort of bubbling along potentially, just to not necessarily festivals, just sort of smaller gigs for bands that we like. And, you know, we're really keen on, I know we're from that sort of 90s background, and I think that's always where our base is going to be, but we're very keen on, and we did it in the fanzine, every issue from the first one, we gave a platform for new bands, you know, because there's no point in us all listening to bands from 30 years ago, because, you know, where's the next generation going to come from? So we're very keen on supporting the new bands as well. And, you know, so we want to put on a few smaller shows to help them out and, you know, give a bit of our experience and give a platform for them, because, you know, some of these bands don't necessarily know how to put on a show, or they probably do, but maybe they haven't got the confidence to do it. And we want to try and help support bands like that. And there's so many good new bands out there. I mean, a band that was on a IWD festival, you know, Cassie recommended them to us, and they blew us away when we saw them live. And we weren't the only ones. There was a lot of people at the end of it who were going, fucking hell, they were amazing. And they're only kids. They're only 18, maybe. Yeah. And they're called Baby Teeth. And they're like a punky band from High Wycombe, so the town itself. And they were unreal. And they're playing at Rebellion now later on in the year, the big punk festival in Blackpool. So we just want to be able to help in any way for bands who maybe haven't played for a long time, and we can help them, or new bands who need a platform, and we can help them as well. So I think that's where we're going. And while we're doing all that, you know, life's been really busy for both of us, but Faye's pretty much there on developing a new website. So although we've had to stop the paper fanzines due to, you know, the economic situation, paper costs have gone up and stuff, so we'll be able to start doing the reviews and interviews and probably be in a lot better position to provide better content online, because, you know, especially when we went quarterly, someone would send us a review of a single or an album, and by the time we actually get to publish it, it's not as relevant. Mm. So if we have got the website up, we're going to be able to sort of give real-time reviews and help people. I think that's sort of where we're going.
Really exciting. Really exciting time for Speakeasy. So Faye, how are you finding building the website then?
It's been a process, because it's not anything I've ever done before. But, you know, I've been able to take inspiration from lots of websites that, you know, Chris and I access all the time for reviews and finding new bands and things like that. So yeah, the inspiration has been the easy part. And I guess, you know, again, kind of pivoting back to that whole branding thing, you know, we know who we are as a brand, so we know what we want it to look like, we know what kind of content we want, so that side of it's really easy. So I guess really the proof will be in the pudding really when we go live with it. But I, you know, I'd give myself 7 out of 10 for effort.
That's awesome. So I guess in terms of what you're listening to at the moment, in fact, I always like to ask my guests what they're listening to, whether that's new or old. What's on your hi-fi at the moment, whether it's streaming or a physical product you're listening to? What's on at the moment, Faye?
So the thing with me is my tastes are so broad. I just move through everything at all different times. But this week I was listening to the reissued Moon Safari by Air, which has got some new recordings that are unheard. So that's just, I mean, that's one of my favourite albums ever. So to kind of listen to that and get the exposure to the new stuff and the different versions has been fantastic. And I've also been, I'm a bit behind, the times in that I just watched only a few weeks ago the newest Edgar Wright film, which is Last Night in Soho, which is a great film if anybody hasn't watched it. And, you know, as a director, he's really keen on running music through all of his films, as anyone who watched them will know. So it's really tipped me on to listen to a lot of 60s female artists again for a bit. So I've been making tons and tons of playlists of different 60s female artists, and that's been a huge love of mine as well. So yeah, I've been a little bit all over the place, if I'm completely honest, in terms of my listening the last few weeks. And then quite a lot of 90s dance music to energise me to empty all the boxes in my house. I've needed that lift. So yeah, bit of everything really.
And what about you, Chris? What's been on your what's been in your ears?
So over the last couple of weeks, I've suddenly discovered I like drum and bass, which I never knew. So a lot of the younger guys who come up to our football club, we've got like a members bar. It's got a wicked jukebox in there. And they keep on putting all this drum, sort of new drum and bass sort of stuff that's coming out now. And don't ask me any names because I haven't got a clue. But, you know, one I listened to the other day sampled the Cardigans, another sampled some classical music. And it blew my mind. I've never really been into any of that sort of music. So listen to a bit of that when I can. And then, you know, listen to some of the older bands that I love, like Therapy, their tour in Trouble Gum, which is one of my favourite albums. So they're listen to that a bit. Sultans of Ping. What else have I listened to? Springsteen. I'm going to see Springsteen again in the summer, so I've listened to him a bit this week. And then I did a playlist for a friend of mine who only just discovered the lottery winners recently, and he said, I really like that, I'd want to listen to more new music, will you do me a playlist? So I spent about 10 minutes just literally lobbing a playlist together, and I ended up listening to it. I thought, man, this is really good. So things like bands like Colour TV, Syracuse, Pit Pony, Adult, Panic Shack, The Institutes. If anybody doesn't know The Institutes, they released their debut album, a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago. We've put them on in a show before. I'm going to just say it's one of the best debuts ever. It just hasn't got the reach. I mean, literally, I'd put it up against nearly any of the 90s albums for debuts. It's that, in my opinion, is that good. That's high praise there. So listening to a lot of new music. Another, like I say, Panic Shack are another band that I really like at the moment. Desperate Journalist. So lots of newer stuff thrown in with a bit of 90s and The Boss. You can't go wrong with Mr. Springsteen.
You certainly can't.
In my opinion.
You certainly can't, Chris. So this pod is all about getting, I guess, to collect their fantasy festivals. Chris, are you a big fan of the festival format? Have you been to many festivals?
I have. I've been to quite a few. I'm taking my daughter to her first festival this year. So she's 15. Yeah, she is 15. 14. 15 in May. And she loves live music. She went to her first gig on her own, where we drove her to an arena the other day, and she went and watched James Arthur, and then we brought her home. But she's come to gigs with me and Faye, seen like Mysterines, Red Rum Club. She went to take her to see Coldplay. She's seen Pink and all these sort of acts. But she's starting to discover it's not all about mainstream. Mm. And so she's starting to discover her own stuff now. We spent a lot of time working out what festival to take her to. Faye's coming with us and my wife. And we looked at Isle of Wight and we nearly booked that. And then we looked at the Mad Cool Festival in Madrid. But it was in school time, but the lineup there is mental. We ended up booking Truckfest, which is great, but it's literally 20 minutes from my door. But it's still a festival. And my daughter doesn't want to camp. She's on the spectrum, so she doesn't. Certain things trigger her and she's a bit nervous. So I've got a mate who runs an executive taxi firm. So he's literally going to pick us up in the morning, take us to the festival, pick us up at closing, bring them home. We can have a shower, a nice bed, do the same the next day. 3 days of just getting chauffeur driven to a festival. Loving it.
That's exactly.
So yeah, I like the festivals. I did Glastonbury 97, Glastonbury 98, so the two muddiest years. I saw Oasis's Dire performance in 2004 at Glastonbury, but on the same bill, was blown away by seeing Paul McCartney there. I've done Reading a few times when I was younger. I did V a couple of times. So I've done quite a few festivals.
And what about you, Faye?
I just love them.
What about you, Faye?
Yeah, I love the festival format because, you know, when else, and again, this is going back to indulging my eclectic taste, I guess. Like, when else do you get to indulge in so many different types of bands and different types of music in one place? But yeah, for me, I think, you know, Reading was my staple because I'm in Swindon, so it was, you know, 35 minutes on the train, easy peasy, load of mates, you know, load of beer, chug it all along. So Reading for me and Glastonbury, I guess, were my two staples. And I think I was the same as Chris. I think I started going 97, 98, and then all the way up to the early 2000s to both of those. And then, you know, I also like, you know, smaller festivals or like more local festivals. So, you know, I know from Swindon, Swindon gets a really bad rep, but we've got a really good event that happens every year called the Swindon Shuffle, where there's, I can't remember how many pubs, but it's multiple pubs get involved and lots of local bands, not just from Swindon, but like Wiltshire and further afield come along. And, you know, you just spend the weekend moving between different pubs and listening to different music. That's always a really good crack. The people that put that on are fantastic. What else? So 2000 Trees is another one that I've been to a few times. So I think I'm right in saying that that was started by Frank Turner, or Frank Turner was definitely involved in putting it together. I've seen some really, really good smaller bands at those kinds of festivals too. But yeah, I just something about a festival crowd. It's just that like inclusive kind of everyone's just there for fun and a really good time, and I've never not had a great time at any festival I've been to. So yeah,
we do Shine every year now, don't we, Pat?
We do
away.
Why didn't I say Shine?
Same, I missed it. Pat the kids away, go away for a long weekend. Started off just myself, Faye and my wife going, and now we've got another two have joined us, and then another two, and there's a big group of us who go every year. And my Faye and my wife's apartment becomes the hub, and everybody just comes to ours and as a party, and then we've somehow got to get home on the Monday and get back to reality. and I'm quite lucky as well in obviously we've got some links now with musicians and whatever, and with my role at the football club, I can put on bands at the football club now, and I'm putting on a beer festival in the summer. If anybody's interested, May the 25th, free entry, and I've managed to get the Kind there, and I've got Syracuse there. We've got a really cool band from Thatcham. They're only like 16, 17 years old, but I'm telling you, they're going all the way. And they're called Beyond the Suns. And they're a bit like, Musey, I suppose. They're a little bit heavier, but they are some talented children. But we've got a few covers bands on, and got one mental band from Swindon called, who are a covers band called Cover Me Bad, headlining. And the singer dresses up as the Honey Monster, and they are bedlam. They are so good. But don't take any drugs if you're watching them, because I think you'd have a bad trip or whatever. So anyway, love festivals.
All right, the time is upon us. So for anyone who's listened before, or if you're a first-time listener, the aim of the Fantastical podcast, as you might know, is to get our guests to create their fantasy festival. So both Faye and Chris get to choose any five acts, one of who must play one of their studio albums in full. And they also get to pick an encore, which all five of their acts can perform together to close their fantasy festival, which can be any song by any act ever. So it's very simple. Five acts take five time slots. So for example, in the last episode of the podcast, I had Matt James on, and he created his Hatstock fantasy festival. He put Nick Drake on in his opening slot, followed by Bill Withers in his super second slot. He picked The Faces, the first time The Faces have been picked in the Fantastival podcast, so he picked them as his Midway Madness. For his pre-headline act, he picked The Beatles, and for them to play the White Album. And for his headline act, he picked The Clash. And then at 11 o'clock, he had all his five acts come back on stage to play The Ship Song, which is an original song by Nick Cave. That's how simple it can be. So this is quite an interesting episode, because we're going to do two individual lineups for you both, and you both don't know each other's lineups, that I'm quite happy about and quite excited about. So it's quite an interesting episode now, guys, we've got coming up.
We just stop it now, because how the hell are we supposed to compete with that?
I'm literally sat here like, how do we follow that?
I didn't as good as that.
So before
it is for you, that's the point.
Yeah, well, I mean, like we said, your lineup is obviously going to be personal to you. Before we get into the lineup, we've obviously got to give your fantasy festivals a name and a venue. So, Faye, I'll go with you first. What are you going to call your fantasy festival, Faye?
So, I've decided, because of how hectic my life has been for the last 2 weeks, I want this festival to be chilled. So, I've orchestrated the chillest festival I can think of. So, I'm going to hold it towards the end of September, and I'm going to call it Equinox, because it's going to coincide with the September equinox. So it's Equinox Festival, and I'm going to hold it at the Eden Project. So we are down in the West Country. We're going to get the best views of the sunset. We're in a beautiful location. They're going to light up all the domes like they do for their Eden sessions. And yeah, I'm just going to feel Nirvana down in the Eden Project for our festival.
All right, I like it. So we've got phase, title and venue. Chris, what are you going to call your fantasy festival lineup, and where are you going to hold yours?
So I'm going to call it OX4. Now, I'm originally from Oxford. OX4 is the postcode for Cowley. It's a little sort of celebration of Ride as well, who called one of their compilation albums OX4 and one of their songs. And it's going to be at... I've gone polar opposite to Faye here. I've gone proper dark and dingy, small capacity venue. So originally in Oxford on the Cowley Road, there was a venue called the Zodiac. It got brought out by the Academy chain, who ruined it, brought the carpet shop next door, made it into a bigger venue. Back in the 90s, all the bands played the Zodiac. You know, I think that's where Creep was recorded, Radiohead's video for Creep. And it was just a wicked venue. It was only, I think, 400 capacity, maybe a little bit more. I even got to see Rage Against the Machine there in a secret gig before they headlined Reading. And it just had so many memories. So it's got to be at the Zodiac in Oxford.
Brilliant. Great venue. Superb. So before we talk about the five acts, I'll come to you first, Chris. Any acts who you want to shout out who you love, but just aren't going to make it into OX4?
Yeah, loads. The problem is I might need to use one of them because I've gone a bit off kilt for my headliner. I don't know if you're going to allow me, so we'll have to see. But if I don't name it, I'll have to use another band. I've got a few backed up. But Syracuse are a new band. Like I said, they're playing at our beer festival, and we put them on before. They're an amazing band from Cheltenham. The White Lies, that's always been mine and my wife's band. We fell in love with them together and seen them numerous times together. She's a massive fan of the White Lies. They were close. The Institute, Therapy, Soul Wants to Ping, Genesis, Oasis, Stone Roses, Pink Floyd, Nirvana, Doors, Metallica, Supergrass, Thousand Yard Stare, Bruce Springsteen. The closest, and it was right to the deadline, I nearly changed it, was Creedence. They didn't quite make it. If there's a dropout and someone can't make it, well, they're dead. They're not all dead, but John Fogerty's, I've seen him live, but they can come over and they can play it for me. But Creedence Clearwater Revival were the closest to getting on it.
All right. Some great acts mentioned aren't coming with us. And what about you, Faye? Anyone you want to shout out who's not getting into the Equinox Festival?
Yeah, so I kind of sat here and I was like, what are all the most chilled bands I can think of? I mentioned one earlier, which was Air. And I haven't got them on there. And also Portishead, which is normally a total staple for me. I've kind of swerved them this time. I don't really know why. I know that's just going to have blown Chris's mind because I'm pretty sure he would have thought I'd have got them to play a full album. And Tracy Chapman I thought about, PJ Harvey I thought about. And also before I really thought about the concept, I was like, oh, am I going to try and recreate this women's festival? So normally I would have put like Skunk Anansie, Garbage, Elastica, Sleeper. And then I was like, also, oh God, there's like loads of 80s music I love. So I was like, oh, do I want the Eurythmics? Do I want Bowie? Do I want Prince? I went all over the shop with it, but I'm happy with what I've landed on. I have got one. I've got one that doesn't quite fit the bill, but I'll explain that to you kind of when we get to that point.
All right, great stuff. All right, let's start with the Equinox Festival in. So it's 2 o'clock, the Eden Project. It's all nice and chill. It's time for your open act to come on stage, Faye. So who's going to open Equinox Festival?
So for my openers, I've gone for a band that's probably not that obvious, but I've gone for a band called Lanterns on the Lake. So they've been around for a while, and they were nominated for the Mercury Music Prize a good few years ago. But I didn't know about them until 2021, I think it was. Chris and I went up to Scotland. We spent some time in Glasgow and Edinburgh, and we went to King Tut's. And it just so happened that they were playing on the weekend that we were there. So we went to see them, and they are just, I mean, it's some of the most beautiful music I've ever heard, both vocally and musically. So they released an album last year called Versions of Us. And that's been one that I've had, you know, on repeat over and over and over. And it's the music's just, it can be, It's predominantly like really tender, but it also at times is really raw. So the subjects that they talk about can be political, but a lot of the time it is just about embracing life and taking the moments, taking the opportunities in your life. So it's just really uplifting music. And Hazel Wild, who's the front woman of the band, I often say that she kind of reminds me of Jane Horrocks when she was in Little Voice. So when she's talking and interacting with the audience, she's, you know, she's really quiet and she kind of talks like this. And, you know, you're not really ready for then this powerful voice that comes out of her. And Chris and I saw them in December, and they had Hazel, obviously, singing, and she was also playing the keyboard and the guitar. They had a violinist, they had two guitarists, and they had two drum kits on the stage, and it was just this wall of sound, and the crowd was completely silent. There was none of this chatting. I think people were just completely blown away with them, so I have to pick them to sort of start as I mean to go on, I think.
All right, great.
Two things to say about that, Faye. Firstly, I've never seen a guitarist with so many pedals as Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, the second drummer was, is it Phil, I forget his surname, the drummer in Radiohead?
Yes, it was.
Wow.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Really cool. They're going to play a fantasy festival for the first time. It's the first time they've been picked at in the podcast, for the first time at the Equinox Festival. So, okay, there you are, open act, Faye. Chris, what about you? Who are you going to put on as the opening act of OX4?
So I'm going for a new band. And not many people might know them, but they're absolutely amazing. And they're purely and simply there to blow the cobwebs away. If everybody's been out the night before, after seeing this band, they're going to be alive and awake. And that band is called Hot Wax. They're a three-piece from Brighton. They've literally just toured with Royal Blood. And they're starting to sort of go places. They're... I don't know how to describe them. They're sort of like a cross between grunge and punk, really. There's a real hole element, you know, Courtney Love and Hole sort of element to the vocals as well. And I was lucky enough to interview the singer Tallulah before they got signed and started to go places. But they're absolutely amazing on record. They're even better live. And I remember seeing an article after I saw them for the first time with John Robb, the famous journalist, and he saw them in Hastings, I think, and said they are the best live band he has seen since he saw Nirvana. So that says something.
That is high praise indeed.
That's my band.
All right. Okay, Hot Wax, first time they've been chosen for Fantasy Festival as well. All right, guys, we've got our opening act. So, Chris, I'm going to stick with you to start off the Super Second. So Hot Wax will play from 2 till 3. We'll take a half-hour break. That'll take us to 3:30. So, Chris, who are you going to have followed in Hot Wax?
A band that I've never seen before. A band that I'm desperate to see, and I pray every day that they will reform. They're a band from Oxford, and they actually played the last ever set at the Zodiac before it closed and became an academy. And that band is the Candy Skins.
Nice.
So why are you... Why are your Super Seconds happening, Chris? Why have they made it into your festival lineup?
I just think they're geniuses. I think they're absolute geniuses. And anybody with kids will probably know of the TV singer. He does shows called Nick Cope. He's famous now on CBBCs and stuff. And he's actually the original singer and guitarist songwriter. He's now taking it doing kids' songs, which are equally entertainment. And I was very tempted to book him just to do his children's songs at one of my festivals, just to get him on and say I've had him on, sort of thing. But no, he's great. And they're a band that they should have been huge. They should have been huge. They played TFI Friday. You know, that's about as big as it got for them. But they were the unluckiest band in the 90s. They signed a record deal. The record label went bust. They signed another record deal. The guy who was the A&R guy who signed them passed away. So then they got passed on. Somebody didn't believe them, and the record label didn't treat them well. Then they released, I think it was their third album, and just as they released it on the new label, the old label reissued their second album. So fans didn't know which album was the new one and which one it wasn't. And then they were going to release one of their best songs, which was hoped to be sort of like their breakthrough song, which was a song called Car Crash. And then the day before it was released, Princess Di had her car crash, so they had to pull it. So they just had so much bad luck. And just with a bit of luck, they could have been, you know, a household name. The songwriting and the storytelling is up there with the best. They are, they're just such a fantastic band, and they never got the luck. And they've only performed twice since the 90s, once at Truck Festival and once for the closing night at the Zodiac. And I, like I said, I pray every day that they reform just so I can see them. So fingers crossed.
All right, great shout. So the Candy Skins, right? Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah, the Candy Skins. First time they've been picked in the Fantasy Festival on the podcast. So they're going to be your Super Seconds act, Chris. So Faye, we'll move on to you. So who are you going to have, Faye, as your Super Seconds act?
So I'm going to continue on with the beautiful female vocalists. And there isn't a story behind this one. This is purely just a band I have never got to see, and I will never now get to see, but I'm going to pick the Cranberries. So, I mean, Dolores, as we all well know, has got the voice of an angel, or had the voice of an angel, I should say. And yeah, I'm just devastated that I never got the chance to experience that, you know, up close. But for me, yeah, it's the Cranberries next. And I think, you know, their music, whilst at times is, you know, punky, they do have a lot of chilled songs that I turn to frequently. I've also, my heritage is Irish as well, so they have a place in my heart. So that's why I'm going for the Cranberries for my Super Seconds.
Okay, great shout. Second time they've been picked on the Fantasy Festival element. So Dolores and the guys play their second Fantasy Festival, right? So we've got your Super Seconds acts done. We'll take another half hour break, then we'll take that to the Midway Madness slot. So Faye, I'll stick with you for the Midway Madness first shout. So who are you going to have, Faye, playing in your Midway Madness slot from 5 till 6?
So this is where I go a little bit off kilter, but I knew I needed to get these into my festival, and it fits with the Midway Madness. So I'm going to have Humble Pie as my Midway Madness. So two key reasons I'm having Humble Pie as my Midway Madness. So the first reason being Steve Marriott, who to me is the best male vocalist of all time. Uncontested, you can't convince me otherwise. And of course, you've got then the guitar skills of Peter Frampton. They are a super group. They didn't hit the big time as much as they should have done. I know they formed towards the end of the 60s, so they probably did miss the boat, I guess, a little bit in terms of the timing. But for me, they are one of the best rock bands to ever exist. So I'm going to chuck in some energy driving Midway Madness with Humble Pie.
All right, great shout. First time Humble Pie have been chosen as well. So we've got, so far, four out of the five acts have been first-timers on the podcast. I love it. All right, Chris, what about you, Din? So who are you going to have follow the Candy Skins in your Midway Madness slot, Chris?
So I have gone for the madness here. It was a toss between this band and Salt and the Ping. I wanted to go proper madness. A band that I've never seen again. A band that, again, I hope will reform in time. I think the lead singer is a genius. So I have chosen Carter and the Unstoppable Sex Machine for my Midday Madness. I think Jim Bob is a genius. I would put his songwriting up there with the likes of Billy Bragg and Paul Heaton as some of the best storytelling songwriters ever to come out of this country. I think he is that good. I absolutely love Jim Bob. So that is my Midday Madness, and I think they will blow the roof off the Zodiac.
In that environment, in that tiny environment, that's going to be one hell of a show. All right, so we've got Carter and the Unstoppable Sex Machine. Again, first time they've been chosen as a Fantasy Festival.
Wow, I'm surprised there.
Yeah, breaking new ground. All right, so we've got your Midway Madness act, so we're three down for both your lineups. Both of you got two left. We'll stick with you then, Chris. So pre-headline act going to get a bit longer to play from 6:30 to 8:00. So, Chris, who are going to be your pre-headliners?
So they're going to play the album in full. And anybody who knows me knows this is my favourite album of all time. And that is Smashing Pumpkins. And they will be playing the album Siamese Dream from start to finish. And I'm very particular on the time frame on this. I know I've heard some other people do this before on your podcast. But I'm going even more extreme. I'm going for the exact concert that they performed, but I want to move it to the Zodiac. You can leave some of the audience behind because the concert was at the London Astoria. But Smashing Pumpkins at the London Astoria in February 1994. They played the whole of Siamese Dream anyway, just not in order, with a couple of others from their debut album, Gish, including, I think it's like a 9.5 minute version of Silverfuck, which if you've never watched it, go onto YouTube and watch the video. It's bedlam. I mean, it finishes off with James Iha, the guitarist, with a Laser Quest helmet and laser gun playing it at the end of the song, while Billy Corgan smashes his guitar into the amp and the drums get pulled down. But that whole set changed my life. I wasn't at the gig, but I remember being, like I said, I went to boarding school and it was quite a insular environment when it came to music, and I'd never heard of Smash Pumpkins. No one had heard of them at the school. And I came home for the summer holidays and my stepfather's niece had come over and she was probably 3 or 4 years older than me. And I knew she was mad on music, and I said to her, you know, who you listen to? She said Smashing Pumpkins. And I'm like, who? So anyway, I went to bed that night, turned on the TV, lying in bed, flicking through the channels. I think we only had four back then. And on channel 4, Smashing Pumpkins, Live at the Astoria. So I hit record on the VHS, God knows what I recorded over, and watched it and was just blown away. Literally, I'm not joking, when it changed my life. I went down the next morning to my stepdad and said, I've just recorded this on VHS. Is there any way that you can move this onto a cassette for me? And he had the equipment. He put it onto a cassette. And I spent the whole of my summer holidays cycling around the village in Oxfordshire that I was brought up in and listening to that from start to finish, repeat, repeat, repeat. Went back to boarding school, said, I've heard this band. They're fucking amazing. Played them today. Everybody was hooked. Smashing Pumpkins became the biggest band at my boarding school all through that one show. And it is a blinder. So that's my pre-headline song.
That is a great story. That is superb. All right, Smashing Pumpkins. Only the third time they've been picked out of 159 episodes. So Billy's bringing the band back. They're going to play OX4 in your pre-headline slot. Okay, Faye, over to you. Who's going to follow Humble Pied in and be your pre-headline act, Faye?
So I'm doing similar to Chris in that my pre-headline act is going to be my act that play their album in full as well. And I'm thinking, right, so it's that time of night, people have had, you know, a good amount to drink, feeling a bit loose, something, and it's time for, again, we'll continue the chill vibes, but with an opportunity to dance. So I'm going to have Massive Attack as my pre-headline act, and they're going to play Mezzanine in full for us, and what a delight that will be. Sun's going to start going down just at this time of night as well, so it's going to be perfect. And for me, I have such good memories attached to Massive Attack. So, you know, the whole kind of inverted commas trip hop genre, as the journalist termed it, was a big influence on me around the late 90s, because I spent a lot of time in Bristol. It was my closest city, and it's the home of trip hop. And, you know, a lot of the artists that kind of fall under that umbrella, I mentioned Portishead earlier, again, you know, one of my favourite bands. There is not a week that goes by that I don't play either Massive Attack or Portishead for hours and hours. So for me, that was easy. It was always going to be an album of that nature, and to just take us into that portion of the evening.
All right, so Massive Attack. Second time they've been picked on the podcast. They're going to play Mezzanine in full for you until 8 o'clock. Then we'll take one more half-hour break, and it'll be time for your headline act. All right, Faye, I'll stick with you then. So with four acts down, we've got one act left. Amazing fantasy festival lineup so far. But who's going to headline your Equinox Festival?
Okay, so this is the one I found hardest. I guess probably most people found this one hardest. But I'm going to have to go with one of the best bands of all time, who have the 7th greatest album of all time, according to Rolling Stone's 500 greatest albums ever, which is Fleetwood Mac. And I'll be very clear in saying I'm going for Buckingham Nicks Fleetwood Mac, because that's when they hit their pinnacle for me. I guess the biggest driver for this with me is Stevie Nicks. Like, if I could transport my soul into someone else's body and live a life, it would be the life of Stevie Nicks. And not without challenge, of course. We know some of the stories, but she is such a badass. Like, she is literally my idol. And yeah, if I'm running this festival, I want Fleetwood Mac, and just for the opportunity to meet Stevie, because if I could even form a sentence, it would be one of the greatest moments of my life. So yeah, we're gonna have Fleetwood Mac, and I'm gonna love every single minute of it.
All right, that's a great shout. Fourth time Fleetwood Mac have been picked on the Fantastival podcast. So they're gonna headline the Equinox Festival. So Chris, come back to your stage now. So you've had four picks. You get to pick a headline act. Now, you did allude to maybe something maybe controversial going on, or you might be trying to play the system here. So I'm a bit intrigued, Chris, to find out what's going to happen with your festival. So who are you going to have, or who's your request going to be to headline your fantasy festival?
I don't know if I can get away with this or not. So I think we might need the VAR here. This person isn't dead, so I don't know if it's the right words, but I want to have a tribute or a celebration of Charlie Stone, who is a female guitarist. Now, the issue I've got is the bands, apart from one or two, the bands that she's played in, I don't think had a long enough set to cover the headline set. So what I would like to do is to have Charlie on stage for 2.5 hours, and then every half an hour, the band changes. And then, so Charlie is on stage for the whole 2.5 hours. And then we have numerous bands come on and join her to celebrate what an amazing, legendary guitarist that she is and the hardest working musician in indie. If I can do that, then I will tell you. If not, I'm going to have to be very quick and give a backup.
Come on, let him.
Yeah, I think you found a loophole there, Chris. Let's do it. Let's go with it.
Hey.
Let's do it.
Right. So for the first half an hour, Charlie Stone will be playing in her actual band. So Charlie Stone in the actual band, and she'll be playing half an hour. And once that stopwatch, we could have a clock above the stage, couldn't we? And when it hits that 30, they'd all run off. It'd be like Live Aid. They won't have a line check or anything. They'd just have to pick up the instruments and carry on. So then the next band who would come on would be Salad, as she played in Salad for a bit. So a great 90s band. And then when they finish, they'll rush off. So Moraine will rush off, and we'll have Gay Dad joining her on stage. And she'll be playing with Gay Dad for a bit. And then they'll run off, and Desperate Journalist will come on and play a half an hour set. Now, if nobody knows Desperate Journalist, they are an amazing band. They played our festival. Highly recommend anybody be listening to them. They just supported Suede on tour recently, and they're absolutely brilliant. And then finally, Desperate Journalist will run off, and Sleeper will come on stage to finish off their set.
That's amazing.
So if I can get away with that, that's what I would do. If not, it'd be Pulp.
Pulp
would have been, because they were amazing at Finsbury Park this summer, or last summer.
All right, that's amazing. All right, your headline act in tribute to Charlie Stone with the five bands. We're all going to do half an hour each, all right? And then at 11 o'clock, I'm going to let Charlie Stone broken back on stage, Sleeper, Desperate Journalist, Gay Dad, Salad, Charlie Stone in the actual band, Smashing Pumpkins, Cut and the Unstoppable Sex Machine, The Kennedy Skins, and Hot Wax all going to be in your stage. I don't know how everyone's going to fit, but we'll get them on. It's a Zodiac.
So we're going to use the front bit in front of the barriers, so everybody will be lined up. You know, so the leads will have to reach a bit longer.
Amazing, Chris. And what are you going to have them all played in to close your fantasy festival?
I still haven't decided, if I'm being brutally honest. this was the hardest bit out of the lot for me. I just did not know what song to choose. So the songs that were in contention were Atomic by Blondie. That was right up there. Then I thought about doing Proud Mary, but the Ike and Tina Turner version with Louise Wenner doing the spoken bit at the beginning. That's what I was thinking. I was going along that route. And then I changed my mind again. And I thought, actually, we'll do The Devil Went Down to Georgia. And then I changed my mind again. And I finally settled on something because when I went to bed last night, I turned on the TV and this film was on, and it was right at this point in the film. And I thought, yeah, we're having that. So we're going to have Everybody Needs Somebody to Love, the Blues Brothers version.
Great shout. Great shout. Okay. That's a great encore. Everybody Needs Somebody to Love. Yeah, absolutely. I can see that going down an absolute treat in the Zodiac with your axe as well. All right, it's a great way to close your fantasy festival, Chris. So, Faye, I'll come back to you. So, Fleetwood Mac have just finished their set. They're bringing on Massive Attack, Humble Pie, The Cranberries, and Lanterns on the Lake for your encore. So, you got, again, a massive wealth of talent on your stage. What are you going to have your lineup play to close your fantasy festival then, Faye?
So I didn't struggle with this one so much. I kind of knew as soon as I picked the Cranberries which song I was going to have for my encore. So I'm going to have Linger by the Cranberries as my encore track. So there's a few reasons for that. So Linger is the song that got Dolores the gig as the vocalist for the Cranberries. So when she originally auditioned for the band, by all accounts, it didn't go so well. So the rest of the band sent her off with the melody for Linger, and she went away and wrote the lyrics. And in effect, it's a love song. It's a song about falling in love with someone you probably shouldn't have fallen in love with. And Christ, we all connect to music in that way. There's no way everyone listening doesn't have a song that they can think about that reminds them of a person or that time. And I really want to hear Dolores and Stevie Nicks' vocals together. So not only that, I think it's a great finisher for the guys that have come along to the festival, because for me, that's always been a fantastic sing-along song. Whenever it's come on in a pub, everyone knows the words. We're all going to have a sing, and we're going to close the festival in just the most beautiful way. So for me, it's Linger. Oh, and also, I love a string section. So that's an additional bonus.
All right, two amazing fantasy festival lineups. Let's lock them in before we change our minds. All right, Faye, I'll start with you then. So we've got the Equinox Festival taking place at the Eden Project. In your open act, we've got Lanterns on the Lake. Super Seconds, we've got the Cranberries. Midway Madness, Humble Pie. Pre-headliners, we've got Massive Attack. They're going to play Mezzanine in Fall. For your headliners, we're going to Fleetwood Mac. And for your encore, they're all going to play Linger together. Are you happy to lock that one in?
Lock it in.
All right, that's locked
in. Absolutely.
And Chris, for you, we've got OX4 taking place in the Zodiacs. Opening act, we've got Hot Wax. Super Seconds, we've got the Candy Skins. Midway Madness, we've got Carter, the Unstoppable Sex Machine. Pre-headliners, we've got Smashing Pumpkins, and they're going to play Siamese Dream in Fall. For your headline act, we're going to have a tribute to Charlie Stone, and they're going to have her five bands play a half-hour set each and take us to 11 o'clock. And for your encore, all of your acts are going to play Everybody Needs Somebody to Love. Chris, you happy to lock that one into the Fantastical Vaults as well?
Lock it in.
Amazing. I must ask you guys, you obviously didn't know each other's lineups. Are there any surprises in there when you see the other one's lineup, or is it pretty much as you expected?
I'm not surprised, but I am absolutely delighted with Chris's Charlie Stone selection, because she's not only an incredible guitarist, I mean, she is unbelievably talented, but she's a fantastic person and she deserves that time on the stage. So I'm in love with that, Chris. Fair play.
Cheers. I knew Faye would go Fleetwood Mac. I was pretty sure she'd go Massive Attack, but there's a few that I thought Poets ever get in there. I thought Sleeper would get in there. But yeah, I mean, I knew, actually, to be fair, I didn't think you would do it, but as soon as you said it, I should have guessed you'd choose Humble Pie as well. But yeah, it was a great lineup.
Thank you. And yours.
So I guess, guys, before we bring this one to a close, then let's recap on the future of Speakeasy then. So let's mention what you've said you've got in the pipeline. So guys, we've got some activity with Electricity going on. We have got a new website being built. Is there anything else you guys want to mention to push Speakeasy, or any events that you've got going on? The floor is yours. So let's hear what the future holds.
So two of those Electricity gigs, one we're promoting, one we're not. But The Kind will be joining them, who have obviously been on your podcast before, or Danny has. So there's that. There's, yeah, like you said, more gigs. We're in discussions about potential other festivals in the future, but that's very early days. Trying to just put on music. At the end of the day, what you do here is amazing with this fantasy thing, but when we book a festival like that IWD, it's exactly like that. It's like building a dream festival for yourself and just hoping other people like it, really. So it's great. You can choose all the bands you like, and hopefully people will pay money to come and do it and cover the cost. that's the whole thing, really.
Amazing. I guess let's shout out your social medias in, because we haven't done so. So if anyone that isn't aware of Speakeasy and how to find you guys on socials, where should people look and what are the handles people should be looking for?
So we are on all the socials. I literally set up a TikTok. Who do I think I am? about 2 or 3 weeks ago in the run-up to the festival. But yeah, we are on Twitter as Speakeasy_zine. Same on Instagram, and you can find us on Facebook as well as Speakeasy Fanzine. Yeah, I think we've got quite a unique enough name that you can just Google us and you'll be able to find us pretty easy.
Great stuff. All right, so that is it, everyone. Thank you for listening to the 159th episode of the Fantastival Podcast. If you've enjoyed this one, please subscribe. You can give the Fantastival Podcast a review. You can do that on iTunes, or you can give us a follow on Spotify. And you can also rate the show now as well and comment on said episode. So if you listen on Spotify, please do that. It helps the podcast go a long way. The podcast is also on Twitter, so make sure to follow us if you don't already, at FantastivalP. You can also email the podcast, if you like, at FantastivalPodcast@outlook.com. This podcast is also on TikTok now, so I take myself out on a Sunday morning walk and do my TikTok video. I'm loving it. My views are going up. It's given me quite the big celebrity head walking around Loughton on a Sunday morning. So if you don't follow us on TikTok, please do so. So unfortunately, we don't play music on this pod, but I'll get a playlist from Chris and Faye of their chosen acts. We'll get a nice little playlist. So at the end of the episode, don't forget to scroll up in your episode description. You'll find a nice little link to a playlist there of all the bands that have been spoken about in this episode. So guys, we finally did it. 159 done and dusted. It's been a pleasure having you both on. You could both do your own podcast because you've both spoke so well. Chris, I'll start with you. How have you found it, buddy?
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, it's a dream doing this. Like I said to you in the briefing, I love doing lists. So this is right up my street. The only problem is there's so many bands in the world, it's really difficult to narrow it down, but it's been thoroughly enjoyable. Thank you.
Been a pleasure having you on, Chris. And what about you, Faye? How have you found coming on the Fantastival Podcast?
I have had a blast for the last couple of hours of us talking. I've really enjoyed it. I did, like I said, coming into it, I thought it was going to be my worst nightmare. But actually, as soon as you start talking about it, as soon as you start talking about the reasons, it kind of all becomes really clear why you pick what you pick. And I think this is such a unique format, Steve. You've absolutely got a really unique thing here, and it's so much fun. So anybody listening who hasn't reached out to Steve yet about coming on and building their own festival, absolutely do it. It's such a good laugh. And Steve, you have been a true gentleman. So thank you so much for having us both on. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. I can't wait to see you guys around at a gig, hopefully soon. And I look forward to what the future holds for Speakeasy. So I'll be back after Easter now. It's a little bit of a break for the podcast, but we're back after Easter and we'll be back with episode number 160. So please make sure to join me. But until then, stay safe, my Fantastival friends. Please continue to spread the word. And that word is Fantastival. Thanks for listening.